Do you invest in ETFs? Whether you're thinking, what in the world is an ETF? Or you're looking for the next opportunity to add to your portfolio. GlobalX has you covered. From big tech to bonds and bars of gold, GlobalX offers a wide range of exchange-traded funds. Go beyond ordinary with GlobalX ETFs. Visit globalxetfs.com.au. That's globalxetfs.com.au.
InvestSmart's portfolios are turning 10. And to celebrate, 10 InvestSmart boot camps are up for grabs. This self-paced online course is ideal for both seasoned investors and those who are just starting out. Valued at $99, you could win a spot on this highly rated course. To enter the competition and for terms and conditions, simply visit investsmart.com.au/win. Don't miss out on this chance to learn from experts and take your investing to the next level. Simply visit investsmart.com.au/win. Good luck.
Hey there, here's a quick note. This podcast contains general financial advice only. That means it's not specific to you, your needs, goals, or objectives, so don't act on the information until you've spoken with your financial advisor. You'll find our full disclosure, disclaimer, and link to our financial services guide in the show notes.
Chris Bates, welcome back to the Australian Investors Podcast, mate.
Owen, great to be here.
It's always a bit of fun, mate. We are recording more and more these days on the Australian Property Podcast, so people may be familiar with your voice from listening to that recently. If you haven't already, check out the Australian Property Podcast. Particularly the Sunday episodes are a bit of fun, where Chris and Pete typically break down all the top topics that week as they relate to property and the economy. But today, mate, you've been on the show before. You know the drill. We're going to talk about property, about lending, about all of what's happening in the property market in 2023, maybe even beyond, and maybe a bit in the past. But just to clear some things up, one of the things that often happens in on the property side is it's incredibly emotional. People are, you know, everyone is impacted by what happens in property. So it's clear why, and it's the added effect of it being a huge financial asset, whether you're an accumulator or renter, or if you're just a retiree and you're trying to deleverage out of property. But I'm curious, as someone who reads so much in the industry, who speaks so frequently and with authority, who do you look to, or where do you look to get information on property, like actual good information on property?
Look, I'm going to sound a bit biased here, but one of the reasons I was so excited to do the Australian Property Podcast with Pete Wargent is I've been reading his blogs for years. I've learned so much off them.
That's good.
Pete covers so many different things, all the elements I think that are necessary with the property market. A lot of people, you know, focus on clearance rates every week. I mean, yeah, that's great. It's one barometer of the market, and it's not a very good one, to be honest. Pete just talks about so many different things, demographics to changes to tax policy to sentiment to, you know, lots of different things. And I think it's a great little overall, I guess, little database that gets access to all those different other sources. So I know Pete's on it, then I don't have to be on it, right? So I'd say Pete Wargent, so it's not just his thoughts, it's the thoughts that he gathers, I think, are really valuable. Yeah. CoreLogic, you know, a lot of people love them. A lot of people, you know, struggle sometimes with them. You know, but ultimately, yeah, they produce some amazing content. Their monthly data pack, you know, even some of their they're doing some amazing things on clearance rates. They do lots of articles and different trends. So I'm always tracking what they're doing in their monthly reports. One of the things I realized I had a gap in, I didn't really understand how cities form, right? And I love anything to do with demographics. So, you know, Simon Kustermark has come on the Australian Property Podcast. I track all the stuff he writes about, you know, the Bernard Salts, any really in the demographic space, because I'm really fascinated with how humans and populations grow, right, and how they change. And so anything in the demographic space I think is really good to follow, right? Housing formation, you know, how populations increasing, interstate migration, how long we're living, you know, how often, you know, et cetera. So anything there. In the development space, I realized I want to know how cities are going to grow, and so I need to figure out where developments are happening. So Urban Developer is an amazing website. I mean, it costs me $40 a month, but for that $40 a month, I know exactly what apartments are getting approved, what the, you know, freeways, you know, shopping centers, industries, you know, et cetera. So industrial property, et cetera. So I think it's a really good source. Just to, not that I love the whole new property space, but just because I want to know where they're building and who's buying, you know, big sites. You know, there's this big site that transacted in Gold Coast just the last 24 hours, right? And that's 4,000 new houses that are going to potentially get built. That stuff you won't find in the media for weeks, if at all. But I know about it now. So I know that that's potentially what's going to happen in that pocket, et cetera. So that's a really good one. The AFR, obviously, I think the quality of reporting is really high, right? And, you know, great people like Chris Joy. I'm not so much agreeance with what he's been saying the last 12 months with the property market. I think he's starting to, I would say, realize the market's more resilient than he thought. You know, he thought a 1% increase in prices would fall 25%. That's not what's happened. But I've tracked his stuff for years. And so... yeah, it is a little bit from everyone. You know, I don't have a philosophy that follows one person. I'm constantly building my own philosophy and then I'm stress testing that with our clients. What's worked, what's not worked. And so I've had, you know, I've built that through, not by reading a book, but by looking at what people have done. And so since 2012, it's all been, you know, younger property investors. And I've seen, and older investors as well. And I can see what the people have done really well. What have they done? What's the sort of consistent sort of themes that are popping out and what, where have they really not worked for them? And so I would say that's where my philosophies come from and where I get my learnings.
I agree wholeheartedly with Pete, obviously. And so we're very lucky to sit down behind the mic with him regularly. But the other one, Urban Developer, is one that you or Pete showed me a little while ago. And I must admit, that's an awesome resource. I didn't realize how good that was until I jumped on and saw that. And for someone who is like an investor in property, it'd be such a good resource if you haven't discovered it already. So thanks for sharing that with us. For folks that haven't heard from you or about you, Chris, a lot of people that listen to this podcast would have, but the podcast is growing so quickly that, you know, many thousands of people listen, new thousands of people listen every month or two. So I'm curious if you, or I'm not curious, but I'm just hopeful you can go back and just tell us about that origin story with the business and how you transitioned from financial advice and why you went into mortgage broking, et cetera.
Yeah, so I was working at a company called Property Planning Australia. They're still around now. They're a great broking business. And I was working as a financial advisor within that business, and I was doing joint meetings with mortgage brokers. And while I would love to have given them advice around their super and insurance and build a long-term plan, their client base was a typical mortgage broking business, which is young clients, right? And what they really care about is property, right? They want to know, how do I buy my first home? How do I do an upgrade? How do I buy my first investment property? How do I do a renovation? How do I restructure my debt to free up a bit of cash flow? Like, and so these are the conversations I was sitting in on. And I actually just fell in love with that conversation, just listening to it. And I wanted to actually run that conversation. So, you know, back in 2013, I said, look, I want to become a mortgage broker. They were like, no, you're the financial advisor. And I'm like, no, I want to be the broker. And so I became a broker in 2013. 2014, I started the business doing financial advice and mortgage broking. You know, over the years, we just really knuckled down on the broking conversation and all the conversations that come around that, all the property decisions. And we fell out of love with financial advice. Part of that's due to the regulation sort of hurdles that were consistently put on the advice industry, making it way too complex to give advice and the amount of documents you needed to produce. And part because we just didn't love those conversations as much anymore. I just didn't want to talk about insurance or super, and I just wanted to guide people in their property decisions. So back in 2020, we gave up our financial advice license and sold the business. And now we just do broking. But, you know, alongside that, we've gone from, you know, writing, you know, under $50 million a year to selling over $1 billion of home loans now, and, you know, over $300 million last year. So, yeah, that's sort of our story.
That's in a nutshell. We just sat down and did a recording for the Australian Business Podcast. If you want to actually know exactly how Chris has grown the business with the team at Blusk, it's an incredible story. But, yeah, huge growth over, like, even though it's only come recently, that hockey stick is really in effect for you guys, which is awesome. And just so for full disclosure, for everyone knows that Chris and I are here today to talk about property and what's going on in the market, but we're also pleased to announce that Rask and Blusk have formed a partnership around, obviously, we've got the Australian Property Podcast now, which Chris co-hosts along with myself, Pete, and Amy Lenardi. But we want to, at Rask, connect more people with high quality advisors. So whether they're financial advisors or whether they're mortgage brokers, and Chris is my mortgage broker, and it's been an awesome experience alongside Ben from the team as well, and have helped me even through my small business journey get into a property and also buy quality assets, right? Like that's a hugely important thing. It's not just, well, here's like a mortgage, or let's just go and apply for this bank and see if you get a loan. Proper advice. And so I'm super excited to announce this partnership and release the news to the Australian Investors Podcast community. So if you are looking at buying a property, if you're looking for advice on property, please take up the link in your show notes, which will be included from here on out. And it basically, you just fill in a form and you can get in touch with Chris's team and go from there, which includes a strategy session with Chris, I might add too, once you go through a bit of the process and get onboarded. But there'll be more links and details in the show notes about all of that. Mate, I wanted to pick your brain on what's happening in property since we last spoke and we did the mini series, which by the way, was super popular with our community. So if you haven't gone and checked that out, go back and check it out. But the last, say, 2 years have been really interesting for me and as an observer and as a homeowner. Coming out of like the back of COVID, things were going absolutely bananas. Then we went into a period of rapidly rising interest rates. And then the beginning of this year was people calling for a 20% house price fall. And up to date to May, and it seems like people are now saying property prices will go up. So, I mean, I'm trying to reconcile all of this and I'm keen to understand how you think about it. And just how do you piece all that together from where we are, where we were, where we are, and where we might be going?
Yeah, so it's a really interesting one, right? And I think you're right. Observing is what we're doing, right? We're not saying this is what we think is going to happen because we've got this massive belief. We're taking in new data like everyone else, right? And what we as brokers, we're a real good leading indicator, I believe, on the market, because we can see that someone's appetite to actually purchase a property, their appetite towards taking on debt, you know, how conservative they are, whether they've got FOMO, whether they've been looking for a while, et cetera. So we're a really good barometer of what buyers are thinking, but we're also a good barometer of what sellers are thinking, right? Are people coming to us and asking whether they're going to do upgrades? Or should I do a renovation? Well, we can see that the construction industry, for example, is going to, you know, especially the bigger builds, are really going to have a tough time in the next few years because no one's coming to us to ask to do a big reno. You know, in 2021, we were getting huge demand for that, but not now, for example. So I would say the broking industry is a really good litmus test to see what client demand is. And I guess it depends on where they're working. Like our segment is that sort of, you know, capital city, more the affluent sort of areas, the higher income type of client. That's absolutely where we've got our knowledge. That's where we specialize, right? And we could see the reason why the market had a really, and 2022 was undoubtedly extremely scary in the property market, right? Because no one thought rates were going to go up. Yeah, some people did. You could easily see that in January, right? That there was inflation issues, but no one thought they would go from zero almost close to 4% within 6 months, right? And no one knew that that would have a 35, 40% reduction to borrowing capacities. And, you know, because everyone was thinking maybe it'd be a slow, gradual increase in interest rates. And so when it started to happen till sort of August, September, October, that was peak fear, right? That was, you know, there was still a bit of stock on the market, but no one was game to buy and no one was willing to make offers. And so if you were in the market at that point in time, absolutely, that was amazing buying. We've got clients who literally had an agreed price. The borrowing capacity's changed. The next day they dropped their price by 100 grand and still got the offer approved. They knew they were the only buyer on it and they just used it as leverage. And so that September, October time, even in August, you know, June, July, I don't think prices had corrected that fast in some places. But by sort of October, November, we could see supply was drying up. You know, I'm looking at lots of different areas in the property market, places that we own, but also clients are buying. And they're all telling me the same problem. They'd love to be buying right now. They're not trying to time the market, but they can't find anything. So we could see the market was freezing up. And the same thing happened in 2018, 2019. So prices in Sydney had fallen 15% and everyone just sat on their hands and said, well, if I'm not selling right now, I'm not going to sell my great asset because A, I can't find something better, and B, I'm not going to get the price I want for it, and I don't want to go into a lot of debt right now. And so the higher rates is forcing people to sit on their hands. So we're getting this, And so this real tightening of supply, and you could see that with the CoreLogic numbers, right? Listings are down, say, 30-40%, and even more in the properties worth more than $1 million. That's the market that really tightened up. And so by the time we got to sort of October, November, I did a post on LinkedIn, and I said, I reckon the best buying's passed. This is way before the CoreLogic numbers started to show positive growth in quarter one. I could just see it. Like, it's just, there's no great properties to buy, and buyers are coming back. And so we always see in sort of that December, January time, I know this is a long-winded, it's a big question. No, I like it. In January, we always see this where buyers come back. Yeah, you know, they have their New Year's resolution. We're quite busy as brokers in January every year, but there's no properties on the market. No one lists their property to January, to after Australia Day. But in February, no properties came on, but buyers kept coming back. And then in March, the same thing, no properties came on. So no properties came on in spring last year, and no properties came on in autumn this year. You know, very few quality assets. And then some sales started to happen because people were like, well, actually, I don't want to try to time this bottom of the market. Now's just a good time to buy. And then the conversation around interest rates really started to subside, right? The fears around inflation rampantly, you know, out of control, and it's just going to keep on going through the roof. You can see market pricing, the issues with the US banks, et cetera. So that fear of interest rates going through the roof had sort of subsided a little bit. And buyers started competing on a small number of properties, and we started to see price growth. Now the sentiment's starting to shift, right? I'm not to say that there's not headwinds ahead, you know, we can talk about those. But ultimately, the media story is starting to shift from, hey, the market's going to fall 20%. Hey, the market's gone up over the last quarter. And it's consistently going up, and clearance rates are at 15 months highs. And so that's where we're at now at the moment. There is a bit of a handbrake on growth. So it's not just going to all of a sudden go up 30-40%, I don't believe, because borrowing capacities are ridiculously tight. So the people entering the market right now, I would say they're the cashed up people who have still got healthy borrowing capacities, who are basically pent up demand. They would love to have upgraded in 2021 or 2020, but they couldn't, or they didn't, or they were scared of the market. They're the ones who are entering right now. The frustrated buyer that missed out are trying to get into the market now because they don't want to miss it like they have done in the past. And they're cashed up and they've still got enough capacity to purchase. But that, I think that cohort isn't like the majority of the market that usually stretches and pushes prices up. They just haven't got the borrowing capacity to enter because prices haven't fallen anywhere near as much as their borrowing capacities.
Don't feel like you didn't do a great service to that matter. Actually, an incredibly big question, which was probably not just a question for one answer. It was a question for an entire series of a podcast, and you did an incredible job of doing that. And so the question that I ask, and it's a really like shallow or glib one, is just, so property prices are not going to crash. Like the headline is, are property prices going to crash, right? And we don't have a crystal ball. We don't know for sure. But if I ask you that, are property prices going to crash? I seem to think, based on your answer, that the answer is maybe not.
So one of the things that are supporting prices is the rental crisis, right? And so it's ridiculously hard to rent right now. Vacancy rates of, you know, 400,000, net migration. You know, a lot of people have moved home for COVID and now moving out. And, you know, household formation is really tight. So renting is really tight. So even though interest rates are really high, people are still looking at housing or buying property to solve their rental, you know, long-term solution. I would say that there is issues though in some parts of the market, right? Because higher interest rates haven't flown through to all the borrowers, right? But it's not going to be across the whole board, because even if there was some debt stress, and there is in more affluent areas, they're not going to rush to sell straight away. We've got lots of clients who are bought in these areas, right? They're doing everything they can to figure out a way to cut back their spending, you know, looking at selling other assets or pulling money out of their businesses or going to family, et cetera. They don't really want to get out of this market. They're just going to do everything they can to get through this danger zone of higher interest rates. Absolutely, some people will be forced to sell in the affluent areas. But even if they do, there's already too much demand in these areas, hence why prices are supported, right? So an increase in supply is going to be offset by more demand, especially if sentiment starts to shift. Where there is still headwinds in the marketplace are in areas where there's a lot of first home buyers who are leveraged up, who can't potentially refinance, And there's a glut. So a lot of, when you think about this, it's in like greenfield housing estates, right? Where, you know, they've all got 90% loans, they've got negative equity. There are a lot of first families with, you know, one income because there's a lot of kids, you know, young kids, et cetera. They're not getting the wage increases, inflation's increasing their living costs. They maybe not got family support. And, you know, that's where potentially you're going to see a bit of supply issue. Now, but the thing to remember here is that a lot of people talk about the fixed rate crash and there's going to, what will cause a property crash is a massive increase in supply and a big decrease in demand. What the banks will do to reduce the amount of supply in the market will be very similar to COVID, I imagine. They'll extend loan terms. They'll give payment holidays. It's not in the bank's interest to do foreclosures. And so even as the people come off these fixed rates, they go to these higher repayments, the banks will work with those customers and, you know, they'll try to limit the amount of people that are forced to sell because it's not in the home buyer's interest to sell, right? You know, they want to, once they know if they're out of the market, they're not going to be able to get back into the market. And so, yeah, the property crash, you know, for example, I don't think that's going to happen because I don't think you're going to see an increase in supply dramatically across the whole market. You might in some pockets. And even the investors, because the rents have gone up a lot, even though interest rates have gone up, you know, the rents have gone up a fair whack, not as much as interest rates, but and then negative gearing, you know, they can get some of those losses back in negative gearing. So a lot of investors will try to hold on. They'll refinance their loan, they'll extend interest only periods, and they'll try to find the cash flow to hold on. And if they can't hold on, even if they do sell, they're selling in a very low supply usually. And so a lot of investors, and usually investors only have to sell one property. They don't go and sell all three of their properties. They sell one, they get the cash hit, and then that buys them 2 or 3 years. And they usually sometimes sell the one that's going to give them the biggest cash hit. And so so sometimes usually their best asset, to be honest. But yeah, that's the overall arc of where things are. But there is a bit of a headwind with growth because of borrowing capacities. However, if we get to a point, though, where interest rates stop going up, and then there's talk of rates coming back down, which is what people are expecting. It's what the market's expecting. It's what the banks are forecasting. You could also see at that point in time, APRA start to relax lending to new borrowers. They've just relaxed lending to existing borrowers. They've allowed it much easier to refinance. And that's increased borrowing capacity 20%. But they could easily come back and say, well, rates are falling. Why have we got a 3% buffer on their home loan, which is their assessment rate? Why don't we reduce that back to 2.5% or 2% or 1%? And so if you get rate cuts plus an reduction in the assessment rate that APRA use, then you could see a massive increase in borrowing capacities with also an increase in the appetite for debt because rates are falling. And that's when you're going to see significant growth start to come back.
If you're a first-time buyer listening to this, if you normally invest in stocks and whatever, please do not take it for granted how important buying your first home is. Just hearing you talk about people that might buy in greenfield or off the plan or those housing estates and now being in a situation where they have a single income maybe as opposed to two and they're in negative equity. I mean, what an absolute nightmare. And I feel for anyone in that situation because it's like it sets you back. It's not a bad share investment. It's not a bad ETF investment. It's probably a 5 or a 10 year recovery, which is scary for a lot of people in terms of that wealth effect. Whereas conversely, if you get it right, you're going 10 years the other way, hopefully. Maybe not all the time, but you just, so like binary. And we've done, Chris and Amy put together a free course on RASC education. If you are a first home buyer, go and check that out and start listening to the Australian Property Podcast to get yourself educated so you do not end up in that situation. And finally, choose someone that you trust to work with as a mortgage broker or accountant. Know their role and what they do for you. You mentioned something before about, the rental crisis, and you and Pete Wargent, who co-hosts the 2 Cents on a Sunday morning, there was a comment that you said in there that the rental crisis could turn into a social issue. Can you walk us through that?
Look, I think this is a huge issue for especially our capital cities, right? Like if we want to keep growing our economy and our cities, we need to keep getting talent to want to live there, right? And, you know, if people can't afford to get a housing solution that they're inspired by, they want to live and even just want it all just so they're not homeless, they're going to leave our cities, right? And they're going to, and so I think it's a social issue because people are like, yeah, I love living in Sydney or Melbourne or even Brisbane in recent years. And they say, but I can't afford to get a house and for my family and I. And so Do I move overseas? Do I move to a different city? And then you've got issues around homelessness. You know, that list is, you know, I don't know exactly how many. I don't want to say the wrong number, but it's 100,000 plus people, right? We've got issues with social housing. Because if you haven't got enough property, who gets the marginalized, get more marginalized, right? And so I'd say there's an issue there. Even just us, there's a global war for talent, right? Like if you want to grow your business, sometimes you've got the workers locally, but sometimes you want to get some people from overseas, right? But if they haven't got a great housing solution, then they're not going to want to move to Sydney, right? They go, well, I can't afford to rent there. I can't afford to buy. So I'm just going to stay. So I think part of, you know, our evolution of our city is actually getting talent here is a housing issue as well. So the whole tenant situation is a bit of a nightmare as well. You know, no grounds, evictions, 1 year leases. There's a real issue just there, you know. And so we need to sort things out there to better align renters' long-term needs with a long-term solution. You know, there's things like build to rent that are coming out, but that's a, you know, maybe 100,000 places get built over the next decade at best, you know, on 11 million houses out there. We need lots of different solutions. I'd say what's happening though is that I would say the rental crisis plus the housing affordability crisis is finally not want the NIMBYs, you know, people who are living in, you know, more the affluent, the aspiring places where people want to live in the capital cities, who the local councils have said, no building in this area, we're full. When you look around, it's quite low density and they could be knocking down houses and building townhouses and apartments. I reckon there's a real pressure on local governments right now going to come down from, you know, state governments and the federal government to, you know, start to, you know, give a bit power back to people in terms of freeing up housing supply in areas that people really want to live.
So this would be like, do you mean like those inner city kind of suburbs, like the nicer, more affluent, 20 minutes from the city kind of places?
Yeah, right. Where I've got very, you know, any development gets applied for, office said no, because that's not what the locals want and that's not what they're going to keep them elected. I think there's a real pressure for allowing densification in these areas, and it's going to be a real point, which is great for future generations, right? Like it's, you can't really expect everyone to just keep moving to these greenfield estates or to live in high-rise towers in these little gluts. There has to be, like other major cities around the world, there has to be a densification in areas that people ultimately also want to live.
That's bad news for my old haunt, which is Hawthorne, mate. I'm sure the folks down there would love a townhouse being slapped up next to their nice little garden.
It's a catch 22. It won't be across the whole city, the whole town straight away, but busier roads, rat runs, train stations, there'll be certain streets within Hawthorne that planning controls will have to be relaxed, right? And I think, but there'll be certain streets in Hawthorne that will be too far away from those things that will have heritage overlays that they'll try to keep the streetscape. So the suburb itself will become more gentrified, I believe. It'll get better high street. You'll get more people there. But you know, it'll affect some homeowners that is particularly around those busier roads that may have an apartment block, you know, affecting their privacy.
So for those that don't know, this is a national podcast, but for those that don't know, Hawthorne, it's like a very nice inner city suburb of Melbourne. And to be honest, a lot of apartments have gone up there in the last few years because of demand and people want to live there. So it's happening already. It's all really interesting because that also brings in this whole idea of like people's constantly betting against property, like property's going to fall, property's going to this, property's going to that. But if you think about it, we need to stimulate investment, right? Not just from like super funds with these build to rent things that are maybe a bit more of a pipe dream at the moment, but like individuals need to be ready to act and developers need to be ready. Construction industry needs to be ready. Yet all of those things are holding people back right now, if you get my drift. Like people worried about interest rates, people worried about increased regulation of property, like negative gearing, all this sort of stuff. Like developers going bust on new builds, which is probably fair because their margins are very slim and they're leveraged up to the hilt. But you keep going down this list. Like if anything, Chris, now I'm not good. We obviously run the Australian Property Podcast. So I just want to hold myself back a little bit. But if anything, they seem supportive structural changes for the long term for property investors and homeowners.
Yeah, I think there's you know, a lot of we need to encourage, if we want to solve a rental crisis, we want a talent to come, we want to give people a housing affordability, we're going to need to build more, right? And so I think a lot of those things are structural and overdue, but it's also going to also create scarcity for the real properties you want to be buying, right? So in Hawthorne, you don't want to buy those new builds on the, you know, on the main road, right? But if you could have an old house, a north-facing rear on one of the better streets in Hawthorne, there's actually going to be less houses in Hawthorne because they're going to knock them down to build townhouses, et cetera. So that's actually going to support their prices. Yeah, it's even though there's this system that's going to change, what you want to do as a property investor, go, what can I buy that's still going to stay really scarce? It's going to be super desirable and it's going to grow at a faster rate than the other properties because it's limited and it also suits, you know, where the money flow is, you know, whether it's income or other assets like people downsizing, et cetera. So, yeah, it's I guess there's, yeah, that's when you're betting on property, you're not betting on the property market, you're betting on one individual property. And so you've got to make that bet right because you've got to think through how's that suburb going to change? How's population going to change? Who really wants that property? Are they going to build more of them? Like there's a lot of decision making that you've got to go into when you're deciding the right property to buy.
Absolutely. There is, mate. Absolutely. So you mentioned like refinancing, there's some changes that come through today at the time of us recording, I believe, in fact, around that. And then there's the buffer rates for APRA on new like borrowing, which may change in time. So there's strings that the regulators can pull and the government can pull as well. If we just drill down a little bit, have there been any particular implications? So you mentioned like new builds are obviously a point of concern for some people, but anything that's like structured is like an opportunity for people other than just in these inner city suburbs?
Look, I would say that this the first tier regions is probably still an opportunity right now, rather than that wasn't an opportunity in 2021. So when I say first tiers, I'm sort of talking the Geelongs, the Mornington Peninsula, the Central Coast, Wollongong, and you know, Sunshine Coast, Gold Coast, etc. I would say right now workers are really nervous around work from home and return to work, and we're not seeing many buyers go to these locations. And in those areas, especially if you can get into the very small markets, right? Where you want to be in Geelong is only a few small suburbs, to be honest. The same in Mornington, the same in sort of Central Coast or Wollongong or etc. So, you know, but if you could, for example, get into those markets that are super desirable for people to leave the capital city for, but they're not doing it right now and they're very limited supply, I'd say there's still an opportunity there because as soon as the confidence comes back, I reckon the war for talent, the employee is going to win. I think that, you know, they're going to demand some type of hybrid solution, they're going to have the more confidence to demand that when they know that, you know, another employer is offering it for them, right? And so I would say that, you know, the next 5 years, there's this, the hybrid solution starts to get really embedded, right? And people can't afford the capital cities because they've run, they'll go back to these regions. And I would say that's the only real thing I can think of now. I see people are back buying in the capital cities. And so it's probably the opportunity is now not getting too picky and not just trying to time the market. I think you've already missed the best buying. It's now just being patient and persistent for a quality asset and potentially still playing on a motivated vendor to sell. You know, if they've listed their property, they want to sell, right? They don't want to damage their digital real estate. They're also a motivated real estate agent. Real estate agents are still losing maybe one in three of their listings because the market won't meet the vendor's expectation, which they've overinflated. So if you make a good offer on the table for a good property, you can potentially take advantage while other buyers are still a little bit relaxed. Once FOMO comes back and people are like missing out on multiple properties, you lose that opportunity. So the other opportunity is that once you are patient and persistent, if you are find the right property, take advantage of it and make a solid offer and get that offer on the table and do all your due diligence while all the other buyers are still a little bit nervous on making the transaction happen. We saw a client pull that off last week, for example. Yeah, so that's, I would say, another opportunity.
Yeah, great. That's actually really interesting to me. Okay, so we've got a few more minutes left here, Chris, and a couple of things I want to say. But the first one is, so that's one side of the ledger, like finding the asset and whatever. But in terms of financing and getting loans and or if you have a house and you've got a mortgage at the moment, is now a time to lock in rates or is this a time that you see more, you're advising more clients to go variable? How are you seeing this?
Variable pricing right now is off the charts in terms of competitiveness. Like, it's the discounts they're offering now are enormous compared to what they're offering 6 or 12 months ago. And so even though the RBA rate's gone from 0 to 3.85, mortgage rates have gone from, say, circa low twos to low fives, right? And so they've only gone up, say, 3%, even though the RBA's gone up 3.75 or whatever it is, right? Chris Joy did an article on this on the weekend saying that, you know, the flow through pricing of all the RBA increases hasn't gone to the consumer because banks are so competitive and fiercely competing for new customers. So because variable rates are so sharp, they're very hard to compare them to fixed rates, which, when we're in this cycle of potential, the top of the cycle with maybe some rate cuts at some point, that's what people are expecting. It's hard to justify locking in rates. We are locking in some customers for, you know, 1 year, depending on the bank and depending on what the variable rate is. And but it's few and far between. It's and typically over the longer term, you know, you want to be a variable than fixed. You know, all the evidence proves that that's a better option. In saying that, though, we were fixing 80-90% of our customers and 80-90% of their loans, you know, in 2021, 2020, when rates were 2%, right? Fixed rates.
Yep, of course.
And there's none of them that have regretted that decision, especially because rates went through the roof. So it is a timing thing. And obviously it's your own personal situation and, you know, the protection you need from a cash flow sometimes comes into it. But there's other ways potentially you can do that as well by having buffers and you don't have to lock in to give you that protection. You need to think that through.
I've got one final question here, mate. It's just a question that I've been dealing with a lot along with Drew, my co-host for our 2 cents segment here on the Investors Podcast. And it's this idea of recycling, debt recycling. So a lot of people send in their questions like, hey, I've got my principal place of residence paid down, or I've got an offset account and I'm thinking that I want to invest. And we've been through the whole, you know, you got to compare after-tax returns and there's risks involved and you got to buy the right assets even if you do. But I'm just curious from your perspective as a mortgage broker and how often you come up with this is people that do this, they take the equity out of their home or they take a line of credit against the property to purchase shares or a business or whatever they're doing. Can you just tell us, like, what's the right way most of the time? It's obviously everyone's circumstances vary, but what's the right process for that and how do people actually do it?
Okay, so from a finance point of view, it's usually quite simple, right? So what we'll do is we'll order a valuation on their property and sometimes we'll go to multiple banks because you can get lucky. You might get a place is worth $1 million, you might get a $1.1 million val somewhere else. So we'll usually, depending on whether they've got a fixed rate at their home, you know, at that bank as well, because sometimes if you haven't got a good fixed rate, well, you can go to any bank. So we'll get a valuation on the property. Let's say it comes in at $1 million, 80% on that's 800,000. So that's usually the max the bank will lend you up to. Sometimes they'll go higher, but we very rarely recommend it, right? So they'll release equity up to 800. Then you look at your current home loan, and I've got a loan of 600, right? So I could release $200,000 of equity, and it's really easy to do. You know, sometimes cash out's really hard, like banks get really tight on their when they'll do it. But, you know, at the moment, cash out's actually really easy, right? So that $200,000 gets released. It'll go into an offset account against a loan of $200,000, right? It's not one loan. Your loan hasn't gone from 600 to 800. You still got your $600,000 loan, but now you've got another loan for 200 with $200,000 in an offset account. What you'll then do is use that $200,000 to buy assets, right? Let's say it's shares. You might drip feed that money into an ETF or a fund or something like that, right? But you don't pay interest on that $200,000 till you spend it. So if you put $20,000 into a fund, you'll only pay interest on $20,000. You've still got $180,000 there available in that offset account. Then that interest, you what speak to an accountant, that's the interest you claim in your tax return. But you'd also have to then also claim the investment income on whatever you buy, right? On your tax return. And so that's what the whole process is. Now, my problem with debt recycling is I think you're trying to make investment returns to then pay off debt. That takes a long time. My attitude would be is pay off your debt through your savings, right? And save hard, release equity, right? But buy assets that you end up holding long-term. Don't focus on this recycling thing to pay off your home loan, because by the time you sell those good assets and you pay capital gains tax, then you've got a market timing issue that you're going to have to try to pick the time to sell. Best investing comes long term. I'm sure you've spoken about this a long time on this podcast. It's compounding, right? So if you bought your $100,000, $200,000 of shares, why try to sell them in 5 years? Why don't you try to hold them for 20 or 30 years? Absolutely. And I would say that that would be where I'd see the dollar, the debt recycling thing go wrong. People then try to sell their investments to then pay off their home loan more and then reborrow and buy those investments. And what you end up doing is trying to time the markets. You're trying to pay capital gains tax. And I think you, you might not need to sell. Yeah. I think it's much simpler if you just break it up. An advisor would guide you on this. Obviously, we're not financial advisors. We were ex-advisors. But, you know, an advisor would guide you on that and what to buy and how to hold it, et cetera. But that's the thought process behind equity release and dollar cost averaging into the markets. I'm just very nervous talking about the word debt recycling. It's not as simple as just buy some shares, sell them, make money, pay off the home loan, reborrow.
Absolutely. There's a lot of risk involved.
Yeah.
And it's short-term focus.
It's short-term focus. And we know how markets don't really, you know, reward short-term investing. It can, but it can also punish you. And so I think you should go into investing with a much longer mindset and much less stressful, right? If I'm dollar cost averaging into this thing for 10, 20 years, why am I worried about short-term markets? As long as I can afford the interest. The other thing I don't like about it as well is that I think the dollar cost averaging is that income you get, why shouldn't you also be trying to reinvest that income, right? And get accumulation, start to build an asset base bigger than your loan. And so I like when people are using that income to rebuy shares, right? And then they're growing their portfolio, right? And so then you really have to just make sure you can afford the interest whole and get your tax return deduction at the end of it. So,
But in your example with that 200 grand, you could use that as the base to start investing for the long term and treat it like a long-term vehicle where you do reinvest dividends and you do all that while also being able to service a loan is the key risk and one of the risks there. So get the expert advice.
And without a margin call, right? So if you go and go to put 100,000 of your own money in, you get to borrow 100,000 and do a margin loan, then you've got the risk of margin loan. The rates are much higher. It's not residential rates. And your terms aren't going to be over 30 years, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah,
that's why it's better. Is you could potentially get an interest-only loan for 5 years and at a very low rate. You just need to make sure you can afford, buy good assets. The other thing is you don't have to pay interest on that money until you use it, right? So you can dollar cost average. You can put in $5,000 a month for 3 years rather than trying to time the market and put 200 grand in at one point, which is extremely, that's why a lot of investors don't invest, is right, because to stomach the, you know, putting $200,000 in the market and you're watching how that's performing over the first few months and people freak out and they sell. When you buy in the market drip feed over many months, it doesn't really matter what the market does, right? If it goes down, that's actually a good thing. It means you can buy at cheaper prices, assuming they're great assets that actually come back.
That's all we like on this podcast, Chris. We like sensible long-term advice from an expert. So we do appreciate you talking about that because it's a question that we get a lot. And clearly, get expert advice from multiple people that that can make you do that with the least amount of risk, at least in theory. So,
you could also very easily over-leverage, right? And you could go too far into that type of strategy and no buffers and then not pay the interest and have to sell those assets at the wrong time. And this could all blow up in your face. You got to be extremely careful using leverage. And so absolutely, you need to get an advisor to really nut down your cash flow, your current debt, and make sure you don't, go all in and because you think the market's going to run on you and it doesn't, and it can really blow up in your face. So be very careful.
Absolutely. It's great wisdom from a guy who gets the question all the time. So just to clear up things, people can get in contact with you, Chris, via the link in the show notes. So through our partnership together, obviously we spoke about it late last year that your business is growing and it's fantastic to see. And so is the RAS community who want trusted advice. And as my mortgage broker, I figured, well, let's approach you and see where you're at. And turns out your business is now taking on partners just like RASC as well, which is amazing, incredible again. So if you do want to reach out to Chris, you'll find all the details in the show notes. There's a link there that says mortgage broking. You can click on that. It'll take you to a form. Fill that in. It goes off to Chris's team and you begin the process. It's something that I need to revisit this year as well. Chris, I haven't told you this, but I'm telling you live on air. It's something that I need to revisit this year for a few reasons. So I'll be in touch, no doubt. But mate, I really do appreciate you taking the time to come on this podcast. You'll find Chris on the Australian Property Podcast every week. You'll find that in the show notes as well. Mate, always a pleasure.
Thank you, Owen. Cheers.
Thanks for listening to this podcast. Before you go, I wanted to share some things with you. Specifically, I wanted to tell you about the 10 ways that Rask could help you in 2024. As many of you know, Rask has grown to become one of the biggest investing and finance platforms in Australia. Across our podcasts, our websites, our memberships, and so on, we now engage around 200,000 Aussies, which, considering we started in a humble lounge room on a Kmart desk, one of those old fake white wooden ones, I'm pretty ecstatic about where we are 6 years later. As part of becoming one of Australia's biggest platforms for wealth creation and preservation, we now have a very special position in the country in that we can bring you some of the best, most thoughtful, expert-driven ways to protect and grow your wealth. And I'm going to share some of those with you now. I've got 10 ways that we can potentially help you or match you with someone who can. The first thing that I want to tell you about is the biggest step we've ever taken at Rask, which is the launch of our Rask Invest platform. This is a platform that lets our team, led by me, invest for you, primarily through low-cost, diversified ETFs. We'll have three strategies at launch, and every investor who comes through can pick one of the three strategies, being a balanced strategy, a growth strategy, and a high growth strategy. The balanced strategy focuses on passive income, and the high growth strategy focuses on longer term compounding. You will find a link in your podcast player to register your interest. We will be taking off soon. Number two, if you prefer to DIY your investing, you can join me and over 4,000 members inside Rask Core. That's our full ETF and ASX share research membership community. You can join now and you'll get updated ETF portfolio recommendations every quarter, as well as ongoing ASX and global stock research. Every single month, we call them the All-Star Stocks. You get that alongside the ETF portfolios, as well as other members-only content. It's called Rask Core. Number three, our first ever partnership with a business other than our own was a business by the name of Blusk, which has since become Flint Group. Flint Group is led by Chris Bates and Christian Stevens, two of Australia's most highly regarded mortgage brokers. Already over 200 Rask community members have begun the Rask plus Flint Group mortgage broking process. You can click the link in your podcast player if you're refinancing, investing, a first home buyer, or whatever. You've probably heard Chris on the show many times. Number four, you can connect with our most trusted financial advisors. Whether you're 25 years old, just graduated uni, and looking to set yourself up, or approaching or in retirement, and you've got that nest egg you want to protect and generate a passive income from, you can get in contact with our trusted panel of financial advisors. You can find the link in your podcast player. It's there each and every week. Just click the thing that says financial planning. Number five, if you want specialist insurance advice, as Warren Buffett said, rule number one is don't lose money. And rule number two is don't forget rule number one. Insurance is vitally important, especially when it comes to your number one asset, you. Whether you're a single income household or a couple, and you just want to protect what would happen if, you want to protect your family if something goes wrong. You want to protect your spouse if you lose your job. You want to protect yourself if you hurt yourself on the weekend at footy. Insurance is a way to do that. And I think the best way to do insurance is through a financial planner. And there's a few reasons for that, but one of them is sometimes some insurers will only work with financial advisors, but they can also be your companion as you go through the sometimes daunting process of getting insurance done properly. Sometimes you might not even know, but you're not even covered, even though you think you are. So get the right advice. You'll find a link in the show notes to check that out. Number six, buying property. If you're like me and you're thinking of buying property in the next 12 months, or maybe you've already invested and you're looking to downsize, getting the right advice and being able to build wealth through property is a proven strategy. It might be one of the most contentious, but I think that we have one of Australia's best property coaches in our ranks. That is Pete Wargent. Pete is the host of the now super popular Australian Property Podcast by Rask, and he's also my analyst team's macro consultant. So if you're a member of Rask Core, you will have seen Pete's name around the traps. He's a property coach and buyer's agent, and he works with a select number of people each and every year. Just a note on this, this is not a commercial thing with Pete. Pete just has great services, so we offer them to the community. And when he fills up, he fills up. You can find out more about Pete's coaching in the show notes. Next up, tracking your portfolio for tax? I think you are, because I think you have to. So we've partnered with Nivexa to help you manage your share and ETF reporting, whether it's tax or performance. All Rask users get 20% off an annual plan with Nivexa. You can sync your portfolio with Nivexa's software, and it automatically tracks your dividends, your capital gains tax, and more. Again, not a commercial partnership. We don't make anything from working with Nivexa, but they do create some great tools which the Rask community uses each and every day. Number 8, want to run your own business? Maybe you already do. If you want more profit, but less stress, less time consumed, and less energy lost, get in contact. We have a partner business called Inflection. The Inflection Accelerator Program is a complete online course that helps you and a community of members engage and follow a proven strategy for growing your business. I'm grateful to be one of the coaches inside the Accelerator program, helping business owners right across Australia. You can find more following the link in your podcast player. It's the one that says coaching. Number 9, if you haven't already checked it out, join over 20,000 other people who tune into the Rask YouTube channel. It is completely free and you get notified when we go live and when we publish podcast episodes. There is a podcast on the Rask network each and every day, as well as bite-sized material that's less than 60 seconds, or those really punchy tutorials and webinars that are just 15 minutes that take you through a really exciting topic, whether it's how to buy a property, whether it's how to pick a dividend ETF. Some of our most popular content actually just explains things like, what the heck is franking credits and how do I calculate if I've got some? That's on our YouTube channel. Number 10, if you want to be a better investor, a saver, a better partner with money, or just understand your own relationship with money, you can do that. All of that by going to the Rask Education website and taking a free course. We've enrolled over 26,000 students at the time of this recording, and we are on a mission to get to 100,000 in the next few years. Rask Education is our mostly free education platform, covering everything from budgeting and automation to the probably, I would say, the best value investing program in the country. So whether you're a value investor, an intermediate investor, you want to know how to value Woolworths shares, or you simply just want to understand what ethical investing is, or buy your first property and what actually happens on settlement day, head to the Rask Education website and enroll in something today. It is free and it supports us, because then I can come on here next month and I can say we've got 27,000, and hopefully we reach critical mass where we can help more Australians manage their money better. Thank you for listening to this long-winded ad. If you want to get in contact with me, you know where to go. There's a link in your show notes. Basically, these 10 services, even though some of them we don't make any money from, support Rask and allow us to produce these podcasts, attract the biggest and best guests from Australia and around the world, and bring them to you to answer your questions. Thank you for being part of the Rask network, and thank you for your ongoing support. Bye for now.